Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Dr. John Coben, your Tyranny Response Unit here on the Tyranny Response Network. We welcome you to the show live this morning in Greenville, South Carolina, from 7:30 to 9 in the morning. Your questions are welcome by telephone to 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We also welcome your questions and comments by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And yesterday was an email avalanche. We ended up having five or six very long emails from very interested and intrigued listeners, some irate with the Tyranny Response Unit and hopefully soon to be pacified. And and we have others who are far more agreeable and amenable to the Tyranny Response Unit. We love getting your emails and your comments. It makes the show interesting, and we'll be discussing those live on the air today. If you happen to be listening to this show, and it's not 7:30 to 9 in the morning, you're listening to a recorded broadcast, obviously, because you clicked the link on policyofliberty.net that says today's broadcast or one of the other broadcasts that are listed, and we're glad you did, and we welcome your comments again 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. If you are listening on the radio at a time besides 7:30 to 9 in the morning Eastern Time, it's because you're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, and we are glad you're listening to the Tyranny Response Network because it's a good thing to do. But you're listening to a recording of an earlier show, and we hope you can profit from it. Well, today we have, as I said, a couple of news stories, but mostly emails from the previous days, and we're going to be looking forward to discussing some of those issues, and thanks for tuning in to hear it. We have here this morning, first of all, someone who sent me an email, sent me a story from News with Views. The Tyranny Response Unit, being the economist type that he is, loves to economize on his time and loves even more when the faithful of you who respond to Tyranny find wonderful articles that can be read on the air. And this morning, I'd like to thank Paul for sending in Samuel Blumenfeld's column this week, which I had not seen, actually just came out yesterday, and it was published in newswithviews.com. And it says, U.S. homeschoolers beat Oxford debaters. Four homeschooled students at Patrick Henry College went to Oxford University in December to take part in the debate with some of Oxford's best student debaters, and two of them won, Matt Dumi, 22, of Peoria, Arizona, and Miss Rayel Papke, 21, of Queen Creek, Arizona, were the winners in a moot court tournament that took 3 days. Notice the winners came from small towns in Arizona, but not from our great centers of academic learning. I don't know. I think you could probably learn a lot in the desert in Arizona. Well, anyway, not from the great centers of academic learning. The students were judged on their debating skills, presentation, and courtroom demeanor. They had to argue over a fictitious lawsuit by a multimillionaire against a sculptor. The point of the dispute was over the sculptor's statue of a purple boll weevil. Interesting. The Americans had to learn the intricacy of the British contract law and a set of judicial fiats. According to the Washington Times on 12/11/04, Matt Dumi remarked, "We didn't really have any parallels we could work off of. We just had to buckle down and learn the material." They also learned about British courtroom decorum, addressing the judges as "my lord" rather than "your honor." Ooh, that would be tough to get used to. I don't know. Your honor's pretty bad, especially when you have dishonorable judges nowadays. In fact, are there any honorable judges left that aren't given to payoffs, palm-rubbing, corruption, and so forth? Well, I don't know. There may be somewhere, but it certainly seems very bleak when one looks at those who stand up for liberty and truth, at any rate, in this country, how they are treated in the United States court system. But we're so thankful to hear this email, or this story, for another plug for homeschooling. Folks, homeschooling is one of the best opportunities we have in the cause for liberty in America today. It's an opportunity for us to not allow our kids to be brainwashed and indoctrinated by the secular humanism that comes along in government schools. And not only the secular humanism, the socialism, the alternative lifestyleism, the environmentalism, and all the other weirdisms that go along with public schools or government school training. And even in the Christian schools, as much as I like Christian schooling, and if people want to use that option, certainly not opposed to it. None of us are, as far as I know, here at the Tyranny Response Network. However, it just doesn't hold a candle to homeschooling. If you're in a Christian school, there still is a huge influence in many of them from the state. They have state-influenced textbooks, government and nationalist-oriented lecturers and tests that are used, and these things do not promote liberty in general. I'm not saying that Christian schools are bad. Don't misunderstand me. I'm just saying that it's a more pure form if you can get your kids into a homeschooled environment. And here we have, I'd love reading the success stories that homeschoolers have. We're already 100 points ahead on national averages, including public and private school students in the mix, on the big exams like the SAT and the ACT. And most people in colleges and college settings are just, going out of their way to try to get homeschoolers to enroll in their universities. This university that's mentioned here, Patrick Henry College, is a homeschoolers college up in Northern Virginia. We actually considered it. I used to actually consider it for my own children at one point, but I found out that they're very inclusive or actually exclusivistic. They refuse to accept any transfer beyond, I think, one or two classes, and they refuse to accept college-level examination program examinations, which are national standardized tests accepted at 2,300 colleges in the United States for credit, because they just believe that they're so far above that level. And they may be, I don't know, that the students don't do well by transferring in any courses. But for those of us like my kids who have taken so many of those courses, it'd be hard to lose a year or two's worth of college tuition just to be able to go there. But I do applaud Patrick Henry College for what they're doing and wish them the best of success, of course. And I'm very happy to see that they've turned out such high-quality homeschoolers in recent years. Again, our phone number here at the station, the Tyranny Response Network, is 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. And this is Dr. John Coben. You're listening to Christian Worldview. We're going to be coming up for a break in just a quick minute. When we come back, we want to, again, dig into some of these very deep emails. So buckle your seatbelt, folks. If you're not ready to think, put the caffeine down the throat, whatever it takes to make you really perky, because the next hour and a half is going to be action-packed and full of brain cell maneuvering items. It's going to be things that are going to make you really have to buckle down, close your eyes, think, even write down a few notes, perhaps, in order to help you get through the rigor ahead. I'm being somewhat facetious, folks, but I mean, this is the Tyranny Response Network. We are not traditional talk radio here. We are a radio network that's dedicated to helping Christians and others, for that matter, think better and promote the ideas of our founding fathers: liberty, free markets, limited government, and peace. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN. Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans and need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464. Welcome back to the show. We're here responding against tyranny, and we are the Tyranny Response Network. This is the Tyranny Response Unit, Dr. John Coben, on Christian Worldview. We have a number of emails and people writing into the show regarding some of the recent conversations we've had on the program, and we appreciate that very much. Emails may be sent to questions@policyofliberty.net 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Travis writes in this morning, and he says, would it be unchristian behavior to allow a robber to repay the money he stole from you by force? I think not. Then why do you consider it unchristian to receive Social Security payments derived solely from money stolen from you? If you continue to collect Social Security payments beyond the amount taken from you by force, then you would be participating in a scheme to rob your fellow man, and that would clearly be wrong. Since the money stolen from you would have been otherwise been added to your legitimate investments for your retirement, then you should also be morally justified in collecting the financial return on your stolen money. This return could be calculated by the historical gains you received on your legitimate investments. This argument is offered not to excuse the Social Security program, which is in no way a Christian, but to provide an ethical remedy for the poor souls who are forced by our government to contribute to a vile system. If the robber were a thug on the street instead of our government, and during his hasty departure running from the scene he dropped some of your cash in the street, would you be wrong in recovering your money? Certainly this would not be viewed as participating in the unjust activity of robbery. Your money taken by force is still your money. Well, Travis, I really appreciate your question this morning on the show, and you are criticizing, effectively, my position yesterday that receiving Social Security is receiving stolen funds, and that those who participate in Social Security are participating in a welfare program, not just a welfare state program, but a wealth transfer program of redistribution designed to take money from those who are working and give it to those who are not working. I argue, and I've argued in Bible and Government, my latest book, Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, available, by the way, at policyofliberty.net for the meager price of $11 or $4 by download. At any rate, I argue that it is indeed a sin and wrong for Christians to take money from the government or from other people because it's receiving stolen funds. I also argue biblically, based on Romans chapter 2, verse 21, where Paul says, "You therefore who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that a man should not steal, do you steal?" Romans 13:9 says, "For these commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, etc., etc." And if there's any other commandment, they're all summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And Ephesians 4:28 says, let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands with what is good, that he may have some to give to him who has need. So the biblical premise from the Christian worldview, Travis, is simply this, that if government extorts money from people by taxation in any form, coercively robs people of their money, and we receive that money, we are receiving stolen funds, and we are effectively stealing from our neighbor. Anytime you apply for a welfare state benefit, in any shape or form, you're essentially giving license or requesting the government to go out and rob somebody else. It doesn't matter that they're going to rob somebody else anyway. It doesn't matter that it's legal. It doesn't matter that it's socially accepted in churches. It still doesn't give you a just reason to go and steal from somebody else. Now, your question is very good, and you think you solved an ethical dilemma by saying, would it be unchristian behavior to allow a robber to repay the money he stole from you by force? I think not, and I don't either, Travis, but we're not dealing with that here. If you could actually see the IRS or whoever it is that's confiscating your cash, literally take it from you and start walking away with it, about to deposit it in a Federal Reserve Bank, and you could shoot him in the leg, run up and grab the money out of his fist, that would be just. The problem is, Travis, it doesn't work that way. They extort the money long distance. They use it by they use their threats long distance, and they threaten you with not only jail time if you don't pay or whatever else it might be, and you pay up. As soon as you pay up electronically, it's electronically deposited into a bank, and because governments run a budget deficit, it's immediately spent. It's gone, period. It's vanished. It's transferred to somebody else, unless you can get it back in the very immediate period before that transition occurs. That's why I left out the other day when we talked about this and saying, if you happen to have the odd case where someone presents you with a tax bill for $10,000 and you have 30 days to pay it, and in that 30 days your were able to acquire a welfare state transfer by filling out a form so that the check arrives at the same time your tax bill is due, and you can literally sign over the back of the check to pay the tax bill, and so it's just one hand paying the other. Never touches your account. You're never extorted from, and no one in the state actually loses money because it's a cross out. That might be the only exception when you can take the government benefit to pay the tax. But except for that small exception, there is no money there to get back. The robber is not in your reach. It's not somebody you can go after and get the money from. Therefore, it's a feeble and lame excuse that you make up in your own mind to justify your crime. And that's all. I don't know how else to put it to you. You're receiving stolen funds. You're not getting your own money back. Your money's gone. It's been stolen. It's history. If you go out and take money from the state, you are robbing somebody else. You are causing someone else to be extorted and lose their money on account of the government's actions towards them, and you incite it. So would it be unchristian behavior to allow a robber to repay the money he stole from you by force? I think not, and neither do I, but that's not the case in this instance with Social Security. Then why do you consider, Travis says, it unchristian to receive Social Security payments derived solely from money stolen from you? Because, Travis, once again, the Social Security money that you would receive is not derived solely from money stolen from you. The money that was stolen from you is gone. It's history. It's spent on some other form of the budget. It's given to somebody else. When you receive a Social Security check, you are stealing that money from somebody else effectively. Now, I know it's indirect because you're using the mafioso boss, the government, the federal racketeering club, to go out and commit the crime and rob somebody else. And you're not directly doing it. And I know that it's legal, and I know it's socially accepted, but it doesn't really make the thing any different. It's still wickedness, and the Bible says to you in Ephesians 4:28, those, you know, don't steal any longer. Those of you who stole, don't steal any longer. So that's the command to you. Now, I know it's hard to give up the Social Security check. I realize it's easy, especially in our society, to receive the stolen funds. You're not going to be criticized for it. Hey, if you don't love your wife, if you don't submit to your husband, if you don't attend church, if you have mixed bathing, some places if you go to movies, and other places, especially here in Greenville, if you drink some alcohol or some wine with dinner, you're going to be criticized. People are going to tell you you're going to go to hell, or they're going to tell you that you're backslidden. But guess what? You can go ahead and receive stolen funds through the government because it's legal, and no one's going to criticize you for it. That doesn't make it any less right, any less wicked. And I think you're completely missing the point. You're not solving an ethical dilemma here, Travis, and I want you to go back and rethink this through. If your money could be gotten back, once again, your cash when it was stolen, fine. There is not a problem with that. Because you can't do that, you are receiving someone else's cash that they were plundered and looted by the aggressive, extortive state. Well, that's my response to you, Travis. I hope that at least piques your interest and satisfies you, or will challenge you to think about it and perhaps write in another comment or criticism or question to the show. Questions can be submitted to questions@policyofliberty.net 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can also call in the show at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We also invite you all to visit the homepage policyofliberty.net and go to the links that are on that page to listen to the various programs we have, including Liberty Minutes, the recordings of the shows that we have for the past 3 days of our broadcast, as well as at the bottom of the page, you'll find two links, one for deep questions for Dr. Coben's radio shows, which are 17 pre-written questions, which we discuss frequently on the show, and we've been getting through a number of those as the show has progressed here in recent days. I encourage you to read those and respond to them offline or out of the show time, and then we can discuss them in the next live show after you email some comments in. There's also a quiz there to help you determine which the four common views of public policy you espouse as an evangelical Christian. We appreciate you taking that quiz, a self-guided 15-question quiz. We welcome you to do so. Please visit policyofliberty.net. It just has a wealth of information and is helpful in hopefully disseminating the truth in our society. We're coming up again to a break. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview.
You're listening to TRN. Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics.
You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Welcome back. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network, trying to make your day. Well, what do you think about Social Security? We had a long discussion on the program yesterday. An entire hour of the hour and a half was dedicated to it, and this morning we've already spent 10 or 15 minutes on it. We're discussing a topic that's a hot button with Christians. Pastors don't want to touch it. Can you imagine what would happen if a pastor nowadays, with all the gray heads in the church, would stand up one day and say, you know, welfare is wrong? And everybody says, hurrah, hurrah, none of us want welfare. And then the next step would be, did you know Social Security is welfare? And if you're receiving a Social Security check, you're receiving welfare, and it's wrong just as much as receiving something else. Do you think there would not be a meeting in the Baptist church of all the deacon board, and that pastor might have some trouble? Or the Presbytery might be complained to, and the Presbyterian pastor might be ousted shortly thereafter? It would be a national or a local crisis if people would just revolt against or complain about Social Security. Just reveal it and expose it for what it is. Folks, I'm not telling you something about Social Security that other people don't know. The Cato Institute, the Heritage Foundation, the think tanks in Washington have exposed Social Security for the farce that it is for many years. People realize this trust fund's a joke, that there are euphemisms used like contributions instead of taxes to describe the payments that are made to it. People are led to believe down a primrose path that there was some fund set up for their retirement, and that fund has now been invaded. Folks, it's gone. There is no trust fund. It's been replaced with a bogus IOU that is unlike any other government IOU. The money is immediately taken out of the trust fund and is spent on whatever they want. It's not there, folks. There is no Social Security system for you. You need to get out of the fantasy of it and stop relying on the labels and the falsehoods that you've been told, and wake up and smell the coffee. If you're receiving a Social Security check, you're receiving a government handout, no different than receiving a student grant or receiving food stamps. It's just the same thing economically, folks. Well, we have Chuck writing in with another question about Social Security and specifically commenting on my article online, which I wrote about privatizing Social Security via the macabre. And if you look at policyofliberty.net and go to the link that says articles, you'll find, as you scroll down, my weekly column. And there are several dozen of my recent weekly columns there in the inventory listed, and you were able to pull them up and read them in English. Some of them have been translated into Spanish for those who have friends or those who speak Spanish can read some of those articles in Spanish. The Tyranny Response, the articles have become so popular that even the Costa Ricans have decided to translate them. Isn't that good to know? At any rate, in addition to that, those producers at the Tyranny Response Network have also seen fit to translate some of them into audio form. So there are some audio files there that you can listen to. This Social Security article is one of those that you'll find there, and Chuck apparently had read that and had listened to the show yesterday, and also, I believe, had written an email in yesterday discussing Social Security and is following up today. He says, "Hi, John. Thank you very much for the detailed response to my questions about Social Security. It added to my understanding, even though I had studied and even given talks on the issue. Truly, this is not the place for the trivial or shallow discussions." Yes. You're right, Chuck. I'll interject there. This is the Tyranny Response Network. We are not in favor of shallow, trite, or trivial discussions. What we want to have is deep discussions that help people think. Now, I realize that's going to nix a large percentage of the population that have gone to the government school or have been indoctrinated by the mass media. Well, we hope that we can even redeem a few of those from the fire, pull them out as things burning up in the fire as we speak. But we really have our main focus in helping those who want to think better. So thank you for the kudos, Chuck. He continues, "One thing I noted when I paid an employee was that the tax does not go to the Social Security Administration, but is tacked on to the income tax bill. So not only is the fund a sham, taxes do not go there directly." And why should they? There's not much point. It's really a waste of time when they just take it out at any rate. It just might as well go directly into the hands of the coffers of the legislators who want to spend it, and they can just at their convenience put this bogus special government IOU in the so-called trust fund. Some, such as the media, Chuck continues, have trouble understanding that there is any difficulty with the Social Security trust fund. And he has the word trust fund in quotations. But imagine if someone
had $15,000 in the bank and wanted to buy a car, but also valued having the savings. He could learn from the government and borrow the money from himself, writing an IOU to himself and buy the car. He gets to have the car. He gets to have his cake and eat it too. Oh, Chuck, you are very satirical here. You're doing good. You're doing well. He gets to have his cake and eat it too, right? Or might it be said that a debt to yourself is not an asset? Chuck's point, and he continues on here. I'll get back to it in a minute. But his point is well taken. What Chuck's basically pointing out is, look, if you have this asset and you want to have the car at the same time, you can't just borrow the money out and have the asset as well as the car. As soon as you borrow the money, for those of you who haven't caught onto this yet, as soon as you borrow the money out, the money's effectively gone, because even though the asset's still on the books, you then have a liability that immediately at any time is attached to that asset and would offset it. So there is no way to have both things. As to your article, Privatizing Social Security via the Macabre, it is clear, except for what happens if your parent lives a long time. I think a person considering this sort of retirement plan might well wonder what happens if his parent lives to be 100, as some people do. Must the insured wait until age 80, assuming a 20-year age gap with his parent, to retire? You mentioned the use of paid-up additions, that's on the whole life policy, but this needs a more explanation, especially on how to use this to retire before the death benefit is paid. Would the PUA, a paid-up addition, be a good show topic sometime? Oh, at any time, Chuck. Enjoying your fine show, Chuck. Well, that's a very good question you've asked there, Chuck, and apparently the article does not explain well enough how this actually works. I'm going to have to summarize, and we may have to go to a break, and I may have to continue into the next segment of the show. Essentially, what you've got with the privatizing plan that I suggested was a guaranteed method of ensuring that Social Security benefits, privatized Social Security benefits, would be paid, and that with a guarantee that's greater than the state. That is death. Everybody's going to die, and if you simply take out even something that has as low a return as a whole life policy, a plain vanilla whole life policy, on the previous generation, could be your mother, your father, an aunt, an uncle, or could even be a non-relative, as long as they're in the generation preceding you, they will most likely predecease you. That's the typical course of things, as we well know. And by buying this policy, one could pay in for only 15 years and usually be able to pay up the policy if it's a mutual participating whole life policy, for instance. They would only have to pay half as much, but when they retired, they would end up getting twice as much as what Social Security would provide, and the guarantee would be twice or much stronger than the government could ever provide. So that's the panacea. That's what's offered. Of course, as I made very clear in the article, the best idea is to eliminate Social Security, not force people to save, not force anybody to have these retirement funds. My point was simply to say, if you're going to have this thing and force people to save for retirement, if that's really the goal, then here is a way that you can do it without having to worry about the stock market volatility, without having to worry about people losing their money. They can use life insurance, buy a life insurance policy on the parents or somebody else in the previous generation, and be fine. Well, Chuck's question is very good, because he's saying, well, what happens if your parents live to be 100 and you're only 20 years younger, you're going to be 80? Well, the answer to this is actually quite simple, Chuck. As life insurance, especially like a whole life, a plain vanilla variety of a mutual company, like a Guardian or a Mass Mutual or a Northwestern Mutual, those kinds of companies, have the advantage of getting what we call paid-up additions and dividends. And what happens is the cash value in these policies grows substantially over the years, so that after, if you're really putting in, say 7% of your income for 15 years, after 25 or 30 years, the cash value and growth in that policy is enough to retire on without collecting the death benefit. So in the public policy that would be used to replace our current Social Security system with a cash value life policy, if the parent got really old and you were ready to retire, say at age 65, and you'd already been paying in 30 years, you would already have enough accumulated in the cash value of the policy to simply cash it out and forget about the death benefit, cash out the death benefit, or cash out the value of the policy and use that to retire on. Or just cash out a portion of it, which would probably be a wiser choice. You start eating away little pieces of the cash, and when your parent parent or uncle or aunt or whoever it is eventually died, then you would get the death benefit in addition to that. So the life insurance option gives you far more flexibility and options than you would have with the Social Security system. In addition, what happens if you die? Your mother lives to 100 and you die at age 65. Well, what happens to that policy then? In Social Security, if you die, you don't get any benefits. You know, it's gone. The welfare state transfer doesn't count anymore. But with the life insurance policy, your heirs would then, receive the benefits. Either you receive the cash value of the policy, or they could, if it's already paid up or essentially paid up, they could continue to enforce until your mother died, and then the grandchildren or whoever it would be, or your wife, or whoever's the next in line as being the heir, would be able to attain the benefits from that policy. So appreciate that comment. We've come up on our break here before the second segment. This is the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Thanks for the question, Chuck.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to the show. This is the Tyranny Response Unit. That's me, Dr. John Coben, on Christian Worldview. We're glad you joined us this morning. Our phone number, if you'd like to call into the show, is 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We also welcome 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, your comments and questions by email sent to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. We just finished up the first half hour largely talking about homeschooling and the fabulous success of homeschoolers, but also the Social Security issue following up from yesterday. Had a couple of emails come in, very thoughtful emails. Appreciate those good comments, Travis and Chuck. And I would just like to encourage you, hold to the Christian worldview. As Ephesians 4:28 says, the Apostle Paul tells us, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need." Let's not be those who receive government benefits and steal, from others. Let's instead be those who work hard and have the ability to give charity to others who have need. That's the Christian worldview. That's the worldview we need to try to invoke in our own lives. I know it's tough. I know giving up the Social Security check would be tough. You'll feel robbed. You'll feel deceived by FDR, who lied to you, and Truman and some of these other folks. And you would, you are, you have been deceived. You have been robbed. These things are absolutely correct. But you know what? God is able to provide. There is no reason in the Christian worldview that we who believe in a sovereign God believe that God will abandon us because we give up something like Social Security on principle. Not stealing is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And if you stop stealing, God will honor your commitment to Him and His Word. And it's when it's higher than fulfilling your own lust or whatever it might be, your own bad choices. And a lot of people didn't choose to be bad by accepting Social Security. They just didn't know. And we appreciate that. We're not condemning anybody here. We're just trying to preach the truth. And Social Security is clearly a welfare program, and we appreciate those who understand that, and we hope that others will begin to grasp it and not accept the payments from the Social Security Administration. At any rate, moving on to some other topics now. We have an email from another listener named Elizabeth, and she has a totally different topic. She says, John, I do appreciate when people call me John, by the way. I know this is Christian Worldview with Dr. Coben, but as I said on the show, I think it was yesterday or the day before, I don't prefer that even students use my title. You're welcome to do so, but I like to be called by my first name because that is my name. However, there's one exception to that. If you or anyone works for the government, and are a servant of the sovereign people and are there as civil servants, supposedly, then you have no choice, but you must use my title. I do not accept being called John by any of those kinds of people because I expect that most of them are parasites, racketeering squads, and mafiosos, or mafioso equivalents, and so you must show some due respect and call me Dr. Coben. For the rest of you, please do address me as John. I do appreciate that. I do make a distinction between human beings and those who have left the human race. John, I was reading the Times Examiner about the new Taylor's... I got my production staff laughing and giggling here, and that's going to turn me into a giggling monster, so I have to be careful. John, I was reading the Times Examiner, a fine publication, by the way, about the new Taylor's Library being opened and was wondering why your view of the public library... What your view of the public library was or is, since it is funded through tax money. I look forward to listening to your show in the future, Elizabeth. Well, that's a very good question, Elizabeth, and I do appreciate that. Before I answer it, I do want to give a plug for this great paper called The Times Examiner here in town that Elizabeth mentions. You can pick up a copy of The Times Examiner in Greenville at 44 Pine Knoll Road. That's right near 291 in Wade Hampton. For those of you who aren't familiar, completely familiar with Greenville, you can actually call over there, and maybe we'll get the phone number. I don't have it handy here, where you can call in and request a subscription from either Bob or Laverl. You can call over there and ask them for a subscription for only $20 per year. Now, for $20 per year, I don't even know how they mail it out weekly. But for that price, you're going to end up getting all the great columns of Walter Williams, Thomas Sowell, yours truly, the Tyranny Response Unit, as well as some neoconservatives. If you want to know the truth of light from darkness, you don't even have to go to the liberal side, folks. You can just read some of the neocons that are published in the Times Examiner and see just how dark the neoconservative movement has come. And all you have to do is really look at George Bush's administration to find out how dark really darkness is, the supposed light that's really dark. At any rate, the Times Examiner, a great publication. I would encourage you all to subscribe. Send a letter to the editor. You can give them a call at 864-268-0576, 864-268-0576, and ask for either Bob or Laverl to set you up with a subscription for just $20 per year. Great paper. And I would also say that my articles, that is the Tyranny Response Unit's articles, are all available at Policy of Liberty, the archive and the inventory of all the past articles dealing with environmentalism, the marriage issue, the politics of the neoconservatives, the difference between states and governments, why we should not give government aid to tsunami victims. All of those articles are available that were published in the Times Examiner. They're available online at policyofliberty.net, and we encourage you to go there and review and think. It doesn't take that long to read an article a day. It's only a page long or a page and a half or maybe 2 pages long. read the article, and think about something, write a comment to the show. And while I'm in the business of giving out phone numbers here, I'll give out ours, 864-201-6955. If you have a question or comment for me today on the show and want to discuss some of these issues live, 864-201-6955. If you're not listening between 7:30 and 9 in the morning, you're listening to a recorded show. And as always, during for you and for anyone, you can send questions and comments to the show at questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. We'll look forward to getting those. Now, getting back to Elizabeth's question, a very good question, and maybe I'll just read it again briefly. He says that new Taylor's South Carolina library being opened, and she was wondering what your view of public library was, since it was funded through tax money. I look forward to listening to the show in the future, Elizabeth. Well, this is a very good question, as I said, and it deals with some of the things that I deal with in my book regarding Bible and government public policy from a Christian perspective. What you find is, Elizabeth, that there are four basic kinds of public policy. Well, there's really three kinds, and one kind needs to be broken into two different categories. The first kind of public policy is what we call reactive public policy. It's public policy aimed at defensive purposes, such as the Department of Justice to bringing criminals to justice, or a Department of Defense in order to protect us from predators, from invading armies, from our terrorists from outside, or from domestic predators within our own borders, or possibly even infectious diseases that would invade us. We need to have protection in a collective sense. The idea of government and its fundamental is reactive. It's to react against those who would seek to harm us. Now, I don't want that to be confused with the militarism, the predatory militarism, the offensive kinds of wars and phony wars that are conducted by recent administrations, such as the George Bush administration and his foibles and follies over in Iraq or Afghanistan and wherever it's going to be next, Iran or North Korea, as well as the Bill Clinton follies when he went over to Croatia and Bosnia and these sorts of things and attacked people there. We're not talking about that as defense. Those could be considered different kinds of policy. They're not reactive. They would be considered proactive policies. And that is, in fact, the second kind of policy, proactive, not designed to react against problems, but designed to do one of two things. First of all, it could be to redistribute wealth, proactive policy to take from somebody who doesn't have or who has a lot of wealth in the government's mind and give it to somebody else. A second kind of proactive policy is what we call behavior modification or behavior-changing policies. So whereas redistribution policies are more like the Robin Hood policy, the Robin Hood role for the state, the second kind of proactive policy is the Big Brother role, the government knows better than you how to live your life role. And you get these sort of behavior modification policies such as you need to wear a helmet, you need to wear a seatbelt, you don't need to have more than 10 shots in your clip because you can kill a deer with fewer than 10 shots, even if you're a bad shot. You at least hit him once or twice, as if that's why we have guns. And we don't have guns constitutionally protected, by the way, to hunt deer. We have them constitutionally protected to hunt government agents or whoever else might be trying to deny us our rights, folks. At any rate, it's a topic for another day, and it's a topic we discussed elsewhere. But proactive policies are designed to either redistribute wealth or to change the behavior of people to conform to some philosophical agenda or goal of either a political action committee, a government or a legislative body, a president through his decrees, or the philosophical leanings of a particular university sect or academic cult. These are what proactive policies are used for. Well, the final category of public policy, which relates to your library question, is what we call policies of inefficient provision. And these are also known as public enterprises. They occur whenever the government looks into the marketplace and finds a business or an enterprise and decides to run it itself. And the greatest examples of this that I like to think of, anyway, because they affect us frequently, and we often don't think twice about them, are the post office and the building inspector. These two individuals are people who are in public enterprise. Government runs both the building inspection process and the mail delivery. I'm not talking about overnight mail. I'm not talking about packages, which are done by other delivery systems, and show that in the market you could have a private delivery system. The government guarantees for itself a monopoly on first-class mail delivery in the Constitution and elsewhere to the point where they have postal inspectors that will fine anybody trying to compete against them. They have taken over a monopoly role in delivering the mail. Now, that doesn't mean that this policy is neither proactive or reactive. We're not reacting to a predator, an invader, somebody trying to hurt us. The government's not trying to change your behavior by running the post office. It's not trying to redistribute wealth. It's simply taking over a private business or a private industry in order to make money or whatever it's going to do with the thing. And it's not real clear why we have any government or public enterprises other than that we have so many socialists in the United States or people that lean towards socialism or people that believe that in the so-called theory of market failure, the market fails and government has to come in and correct it. Well, in the same way, we have the public library. In the same way, we have a building inspector and the post office that could be provided by the private market. We have libraries, which could be provided by the market, and instead, government comes in and operates them as an enterprise. Well, be that as it may, you may say, well, this is all funded by tax money. I think that's where your question, what do I think about a public library? Well, I think about it the same way I think about a post office. Somebody has extorted money from somebody else and is providing a good or service. Now, when they extort the money, they're forcing the people to buy a good and service that they probably would end up buying in the market at any rate. There would be some sort of private library system, for instance. The main problem we have with these kinds of policies is not on a moral, of a moral nature, but more of an efficiency nature. Because I think, at least from my perspective, it's easy to classify any kind of public policy aimed at redistribution or at behavior changing as immoral, wrong, wicked, and a number of other adjectives I might attribute to it. But I can't say the same thing about inefficient provision policies. The government is simply providing something it has no business doing, and because it's run by a bureaucracy without a profit motive, it's going to be done inefficiently and probably ineffectively and probably not in the public interest. And to that extent, it is thievery. It is stealing somebody's time or not making the most efficient use of something is thievery. But I think as far as participation goes and usefulness of the thing, you can participate and take advantage of using the government-run industries, although if you ever have a choice, I think you should not do it. And I think if it ever comes to a vote, you should always vote against any kind of public provision of good that can be provided in the market. Well, I hope that answers your question. I appreciate any follow-up you might give to that. And on the Tyranny Response Network, we love thinking about these important issues from a Christian point of view, whether something's moral and it should be opposed whole lock, stock, and barrel, or whether it's something that's simply a policy of inefficient provision that we can utilize but, you know, sort of hold our nose when we walk through the door. This is the Tyranny Response Network. We've actually passed our time for our normal break. We're going to jump into a quick break now on the Tyranny Response Network. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN. Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
What better way to make your day than with Christian Worldview? Start the morning out right. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. Thank you, Clint, for that wonderful endorsement. We do appreciate your support. We have another email that came in as well from Steve. Lots of emails today, and we appreciate that. We like to have the interaction with our listeners, and we're glad that you're listening and have some important things to think about and say. Steve writes the following. Hello, sir. He must be a Southerner because only Southerners address people as sir. The rest of us have lost all of that sort of etiquette for the past. Hello, sir. I just discovered your website through a reference from covenantnews.com. Well, that sounds theonomic. It may or not be, but good. I haven't been to covenantnews.com. I am also listening to your explanation of Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2 and wanted to say that I appreciate hearing sound teaching on this matter so far. I would also be interested in hearing quality teaching comparing living life as a Christian in ancient Rome under Nero and living life as a Christian in modern America under the federal government. For all practical purposes, I think the U.S. Constitution no longer applies. Wow. Well, Steve, as far as being only six lines long, you've hit on some extremely deep topics, especially from a Christian worldview, and I appreciate you doing so. I think what Steve's referring to is we have running on the webpage a pre-recorded broadcast I did a week or so ago. I think it was on the 18th of January, 2005, where we said where I specifically talked most of the show about Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2 and how we understand those passages from a biblical perspective. I won't repeat all of that now, but I would encourage those of you who are interested in those topics and haven't heard it to go to the website and click on that link for the special recorded broadcast on Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2 and listen to that. I also deal with these topics quite a bit in my book, Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, and I would recommend that you go to the website and download the book or order the book in paperback form and have it delivered to your home so that you can read it and think about it, think about these issues. Well, Steve is writing in and inquiring about is, look, the Roman civilization was obviously different than our civilization. They had a Caesar. And the Caesar was a totalitarian in terms of his authority. Also, they had paganism, and they had no freedom of religion. Basically, if your state was not ordained, or your God was not ordained by the state and accepted and approved by the state, you were not able to worship him. In addition to that, you had rampant infanticide, suicide, abortion. Well, we have rampant abortion today, so there's a commonality, but that was a bit different to have the massive amounts of open abortion, suicide, and infanticide going on. There was lawlessness. There was cruelty. There was an incredible amount of slavery where 30 or more percent of the population were enslaved, and there was a great deal of injustice and uncertainty in life. In America, we and the apostles were writing to Christians under those circumstances. The average citizen had very little power, and not only legally, but even socially, or in terms of his own arms, had little he could muster. In America, it's a little different because, at least at its founding, there was a Constitution, and under the Constitution, we were given certain rights, namely the Second Amendment, which allowed us basically gave us sort of a carte blanche to say, look, we're not going to just jump the government and overthrow them for light and trivial causes, as Jefferson said. But when they really get out of line, we got these guns here to go blast them and throw them out, throw the bums out by force and start something new. Well, that's part of our government system. We also have powers at the and rights, I guess you could say, that the Roman citizens did not, those in the Roman Empire. Not only do we vote and sit on a jury, not only can we run for political office, we can also be involved with the process and at least try for a redress of grievances. And we have a constitution that basically says our philosophy of government is different. Not only do we have freedom of religion, but we believe there are certain rights that are inalienable or unalienable, ordained by God before or antecedent to government, antecedent to the state, and that we can access those rights at any time. Government may not usurp them. So our whole system of government, a philosophy, is very different. So how does Romans 13 and 1 Peter 2, how do those passages apply to the Christian living at Rome versus the Christian living in modern America, which is very different? I mean, a lot of people still live under systems that are like Rome. I can think of people living under Fidel Castro, for instance. So do Paul and Peter's words change with the culture or with the different government system that's in place? It's a good point. We're going to take a quick break because we missed the other one. We're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be back in just a minute on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual.
Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to the show. We want to get right back into Steve's message. Before I do, I'll just remind you that our phone number here is 864-201-6955 at the Tyranny Response Network. That's 864-6955. And you can also send your email to us at questions@policyofliberty.net, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, at any rate, Steve's emphasizing that there is a difference between Roman civilization and the American civilization. How does that change the way we should interpret the passage? Well, I think it makes a tremendous difference, not only because we have different rights and responsibilities, but it might also even change the level of obedience that we have. And that's where the rub really comes. Some Christians are going to say, oh, no, you can't change that. No matter what system you're under, you have to obey whatever they say. The Divine Right School is very big on this. Others would say, look, especially because we live in America where we have a constitution and the philosophical framework that we had, that revolt and rebellion are built into our system, and we have to be more on the rebellious side, and that is really obeying the government. And we have someone calling in at the moment. We'd like to take the caller right away if we can. Welcome to the show. This is Dr. John Coben. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine. Welcome to the show. Who am I speaking to?
This is Stuart.
Hey, Stuart.
Really appreciate your show. And, you know, something occurred to me. We're talking about Romans 13 and Peter's passage and the system that we're living in and so forth. You know, we have something, we've been given a great gift by God that those people in that time weren't given. That is a constitutional republic, which allows us to redress the grievances that they did not have. And so certainly Scripture, you have to say, it's applicable to all people at all times, but sometimes the applications may be a little different from time to time. And I think in this situation, first of all, we don't have a Caesar, so to speak. We have a constitution that doesn't give us, but certainly guarantees protection of certain rights that we understand as having been given by God. So mm-hmm. I think our rights and responsibilities, as it were, are much different maybe than those of the first century church.
Let me ask you a question. When you greet your brethren, do you greet them with a holy kiss?
Sometimes.
Really? All right. Well, I don't want to meet you at church then, but at any rate, Stuart, not that I don't appreciate you. I just don't like kissing other guys. I hope you don't get the wrong idea.
I understand what you're saying. I think certainly some of those things are cultural. I think we do have to be very careful about passing off scriptural admonitions and commands as just being cultural. But by the same token, we need to take into account the culture that we're living in and apply scripture in a proper way.
And I agree 100% with that. We don't want to just pass everything off as culture. The problem is with the text here is that culture has dramatically changed in the same way that men don't kiss each other anymore, at least in our society. They probably do in other societies, and that's fine if they do, if that's normal for the culture. We don't have a problem with that. On the other hand, when we have a dramatic change in the form of government from what Rome was, which was completely different to what the American experience has been, there is a dramatic cultural change, and that has to say something about the application of the principles which don't change in the passage to our modern day. For instance, is the obedience due to George Bush and the Congress, or is the obedience due to we the people or to the Constitution? I mean, who is our ultimate allegiance to as far as an authority in government? Is it an idealized state, what the state should be like in America, or is it to whatever the state happens to be at that time? And these are legitimate questions and are going to depend, change the interpretation according to culture. So I appreciate your comments.
Well, I think it's important to say we do not have a Caesar per se, and if we were to identify anyone or any entity or whatever as Caesar, I think it would have to be the Constitution.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate the call, and
I think we need to be held to that, as well as those that we have hired to represent us need to be held to that as well.
Right. Very good. Well, I appreciate the call and the comment.
You're doing a great job, and I appreciate the show and all that you're doing. So keep it up.
All right, Stuart. Thanks for the call. Look forward to talking with you again. And that is, Stuart is really thinking deeply about this, because this is really an important issue. You can't just go to the scriptures without thinking about the historical context or the change in context in which we now live. When Peter goes out and obviously Jesus tells us to go ahead and start carrying around a sword, I don't think we take that literally. We use the changes in history, culture, science, and so forth, and we say, basically, look, that means right now I need to put a 44 or 45 or a 357 in my hip. We need to carry on in a little different way. Before we go into our next break, I just want to also comment and finalize something on Steve's note here, that he says, for all practical purposes, I don't think the U.S. Constitution applies any longer today. Well, that may well be the case, and if you make that case, then you have to decide, Steve, well, do I live in a totalitarian state? Is the New World Order really no different than a Castro kind of regime or a Stalinist regime or whatever? And if so, your response might change. You might say the Constitution, although they give lip service to it, is no longer valid. And if it's no longer valid, then I can no longer claim its benefits and protections and privileges, or not privileges, the benefits and protections that are guaranteed under it. And therefore, I can't, I have a very different response. On the other hand, if you still want to make the case that it does apply, you might change your response, and I, for one, give you the liberty of conscience to choose either way and decide what is the correct way to do in your understanding. But just have not a rebellious attitude, and having an attitude that says, I'm going to do what's right in this regard, given these presuppositions, I think is important for the Christian worldview. We're up against another break. We'll be back in just a minute on the Tyranny Response Network. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN. Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Well, this is Dr. John Coben. We're back again. And just a plethora of emails today. We do appreciate you supporting the show by sending emails and phone calls to the show. Makes the show far more interactive and interesting, and helps people, I think, give a more thought to the questions of the day, turning to public policy, the nature of the state, the Christian's response to the state. We're glad to have Christians and non-Christians listening. We know that there are a number of folks who are listening who are not Christians, and we're thankful for that. Our hope, of course, at the Tyranny Response Network is that you would repent of your sins and that you would receive Christ as Savior, because I think you have no hope in this world without Christ, and we would encourage that. But on the other hand, until you reach that point, we're very happy to have you along listening and promoting the cause of truth and liberty in this nation, because we're all Americans. lives, whether we're Christians or not. And we certainly have the same, should cherish the same values that our founders had in this founding of this wonderful and great country. Well, we have a final email this morning. This is a rather lengthy email, but I want to go ahead and read online what Gary is writing in to the show, as I think he brings some excellent points, and we can perhaps make some comments along the way. So I'll interject along the way because it's just too long to read it all at once and then go back to it. He says, "Hello, Dr. Coben," and you're welcome to call me John, by the way, Gary. "Hello, Dr. Coben. I recently came across your site, www.policyofliberty.net. I've read through a number of your articles and also the quiz." He's talking about the quiz at the bottom of the page where you can find out what perspective of public policy you think is right. Please go there and take it. "They have enabled me to better understand some of my own views concerning the Christian and public policy. Over the last several years, my understanding has gone through a progression. I had always considered myself to be an optimistic amillennialist. I do not agree with the dispensationalist view of eschatology or its theology overall. I believe that the eschatological and other theological beliefs, that is, dispensational theology versus covenant theology, will affect a person's views on public policy." You're right, it will. "The dispensational Christian right has been convinced that all of this is a fulfillment of prophecy. Because of this, I believe that their ability to clearly think through important issues has been severely hampered. Last year, I decided to try again and gain a better understanding of covenant theology, since I knew that they were more similar in their eschatological views with me, being an amillennialist, I suppose. I am also an amillennialist, by the way, the Tyranny Response Unit, although we certainly welcome anyone who has different eschatological views on our program, their ideas, because I think there's nothing carved in stone about eschatology, really. But at any rate, I was starting to lean toward the Reconstructionist, the anomic view of the Constitution Party. Though I still felt this vein of libertarianism running through me." Oh, hard to get rid of that thing. I too am a pro-life libertarian, so I understand. I feel what you're going through. "As I learned more about the presuppositions of covenant theology, I began to see that, as you say in your quiz, the natural tendency for Presbyterians and Reformed churches is to be postmillennial and theonomic. I believe that this is because of the basic presuppositions of covenant theology." Yes, you are quite right, Gary. "Most recently, I have begun to look at new covenant theology and have found that it is pretty much what I have always believed. I believe that the New Testament is the final authoritative and infallible source for Christian doctrine. Therefore, while most of the Ten Commandments are mentioned in the New Testament, it is the law of Christ that we as Christians are followed follow as summed up in what Jesus said were the two greatest commandments. Though I followed the Roy Moore issue and was somewhat influenced by the Reconstructionist view, I have since come to change my view. At the time, I could not help myself but ask, why is there not more outrage from the evangelical right, not only of the Roy Moore issue, but also on many other issues? Why do pastors not address the issues of the day? In my opinion, displaying the Ten Commandments as historical reference to the Judeo-Christian roots of our law in America would be acceptable. I just do not think that we should set up a Christian Taliban style of government to enforce Old Testament laws." So you're out of the theonomic camp then, Gary. "You cannot legislate morality now any more than Constantine could in the 4th century. I, too, would not like the thought of having a covetousness police. Until the last election, I'd been voting on the lesser of two evils, strictly because of the abortion issue. It has only been in the last few years that I began to take a look at the other parties and what they stood for. Actually, the first third-party platform I read was the America First Party, then the Constitution Party, and finally the Libertarian Party. As I began to explore the Constitution and Libertarian Party philosophies, I tended to be split. I felt that both parties had good points and that I agreed with." And by the way, the Tyranny Response Unit is split, if you want to call that. We have supporters from both parties, Gary, and we're glad to have both because they're so similar. In I'd say 90% of it is the same. At least I argued that in a recent column. "Being a Christian," Gary continues, "I was somewhat drawn to the Constitution Party, but I became aware that there are many pro-life libertarians," yes, and I'm one, by the way, Gary, "and Christians in the Libertarian Party. I ended up voting for the Constitution Party candidate." Not a bad choice, Gary. We appreciate that, because not voting for George Bush or the other scoundrel was always the right thing to do. I agree with you that covenant marriages would be much better than needing a license to get married. I also believe that since most of the churches have become corporations and become licensed, that that is the other reason why most of the Christian rites are either theonomists or divine writers. As you mentioned in your quiz, most Christians seem to hold the divine right view by default. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Peter Kershaw of Our Heal Our Land Ministries. Yes, as a matter of fact, his recorded broadcast has been playing on the Tyranny Response Network, and he has some excellent points. He deals directly with the issue of churches and 501c3s. He is the author of In Caesar's Grip and conducts the National Unlicensed Church Conference. He has also written many articles that, for example, Reemergence of the Divine Right of Kings. Oh, I'd like to see that, Gary, if you could email it to me. That would be very interesting to me. While I cannot say for sure, I believe he is a theonomist. You can also find out information on this same issue at the Ecclesiastical Law Center. One question I have is, can a Christian who holds to the liberty of conscience perspective be postmillennial in their eschatology, although not via the theonomist reconstructionist version? The answer is simply yes, and I'll continue on with your letter. In other words, can we believe that eventually the gospel will influence enough individuals that someday the world may actually be much better because of God's grace working in individuals? Is the command of Jesus in the Great Commission to make disciples of all nations the same as simply evangelizing or having them effect change in societies by becoming salt and light? Well, I think it is both things. These are some questions that I have. The question you really have to ask, though, is what can be transformed under the dominion mandate? Is government one of those things that can be transformed? I say no. Theonomists would say yes. Are we to be defeatist, or should we be positive in trying to change this? The theonomists are trying to be positive, while dispensationalists are defeatists. I agree. Perhaps if we had the proper role of government and liberty, then the gospel would be much more effective. There's another paragraph left, and we're coming up against a break, and I want to read that when we come back. I just want to emphasize to you, those of you listening to the Tyranny Response Network, that this is someone who's truly thinking. And how appreciative are we of this? I'm reading this whole long email from a man who's struggling with the deep issues of eschatology, public policy, the Bible, and the philosophy that a Christian should have in his Christian worldview. And I appreciate that very much, Gary, and I welcome your comments, and I welcome all of you who are thinking this way to share your comments, that all of us might learn and grow up together in the knowledge of the Lord our Savior, as well as our understanding of public policy, liberty, and the heritage of our great nation. You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview, and we'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN. Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
Oh yes, we're making your day here at the Tyranny Response Network. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We're reading a very thoughtful, insightful letter from Gary, who sent his email to questions@policyofliberty.net. We'd welcome you to do the same thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, questions@policyofliberty.net. Between 7:30 and 9 a.m. Eastern Time, please also call us on the phone, as we received a call earlier from Stuart, 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955. Well, continuing Gary's letter, He says, after reading some of your articles, which are all available at Policy of Liberty, by the way, I sense that you would like to see more unity between the pro-life libertarians and the Constitution Party. And yes, we have it here, by the way, at the Tyranny Response Network. I would like to see a unification of all third parties on the political right. I ran across Americans for a Free Republic early last year. It played a large role in my transition toward the libertarian view of government. In the book, Breaking the Demo-Publican Monopoly, a very unique political strategy is outlined, which I truly believe would be worth your time to examine. However, you must be able to think outside the box. Folks, if anyone is able to think outside the box, it's me. Have you noticed that the box over there includes all sorts of other talk show hosts, and I'm the only one that's really different than them, at least in the Southeast here that we know of. Everyone else is in the box, and I am certainly out of the box. So don't worry, I will be able to, Gary, think outside the box. It is only a strategy for a starting point. It is for political realists, not political idealists. It is the main focus of the attempt of the attachment PDF Think Liberty below. Review it and the links included in it. I believe it contains much wisdom. I am not sure if your radio broadcast is in my area or not. Akron, Cleveland, I would like to be able to listen to it. How great that we have people from Ohio listening to the show. After you have a chance to review the strategy for Americans or repeat, please drop me a short note. Thank you for your opinion. Gary, please send it and any links you can. I'll be happy to do that. We have a caller calling in on the line now. We'd like to welcome you to the show. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking with?
Good morning, John. This is Edward.
Hello, Edward.
From Greenville.
Thanks for calling, Edward. I'm just fine, thanks. How are you?
Good.
What?
I want to make a couple comments on Gary's letter. I think the kind of the underlying theme of it is that a lot of the issues that Christians hold dear are receiving lip service from the Republican Party, but no real action. And that I'm tired of being lied to, and voting for the lesser of two evils, getting us nothing but more evil. And just take the abortion issue. George Bush gives lip service to pro-life constituents, and he this phrase that he uses repeatedly, that he wants to see a culture of life. I'd like a definition of what a culture of life means.
It's probably some stem cells.
I can't think of one thing that he has done to stop one abortion.
But
he hasn't done anything.
Well, I'm thinking the culture of life is more like the life envisioned in the Petri dish, Edward. I just can't imagine that George Bush has any realistic understanding of what life means. There are 4,000 innocent unborn children murdered every day in the United States with an executive.
Yeah, and if his new Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, stormed in his office with a report from the CIA that said that there was going to be a terrorist attack and that 4,000 Americans were going to die today. But if you'll sign this executive order, we can prevent it from happening. He'd sign it without even reading it. He'd sign it in a minute.
Well, you might give it. You might.
4,000 babies will die today, tomorrow, the next day, every day this year, and he just wants a culture of life. He's not willing to really do anything about it.
Well, it's a great point, but I wonder what would actually happen if he did get that news. You might be giving George W. a little too much credit. The first response he might give, and this is conjecture, of course, is, hey, what do we stand to gain from this terrorist act? I mean, do you really think that we might get some more jobs out of this? We'll get a little more power? Do you think they might repeal the amendment that requires me to only have two terms? Can I go for a third term if we get enough terror? I mean, you got to ask the real questions. This person is a self-interested, shifty politician, and his whole goal is not to prevent terror attacks on the United States, I think, as much as it is to defend his own power, his own cause, and promote his own wishes and demands on at the expense of the American public.
Well, I guess the main point that I want to make, and I don't disagree with that, I think you're right. I think it's right to be cynical, but if you're really and truly consistently pro-life, those 4,000 babies that will die today are just as much human and worthy of protection as 4,000 business people in a building that gets hit by an airplane. And for him to just dance around that issue and to say he's pro-life, I find to be very hypocritical.
You're absolutely
until,
right. 100% agreement.
Quit rewarding these politicians with their votes for telling them what they want to hear. and then turning around and doing something else, we're going to keep getting that. And I think the only thing they'll understand is losing, and we need to let some of them lose.
Mm.
We're not going to have any more dead babies with a John Kerry than we are with a George Bush.
Mm. Great point. I agree with you 100% there, Edward. Thanks for the call. It's an excellent comment.
I enjoy it.
Appreciate that. We're coming up on a quick break here, and we'll take that right now, and then when we come back, we'll come in with the last show segment. This is the Tyranny Response Network, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN. Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
We're hoping that we've made your day today. We appreciate all the phone calls today. A very active day. Five very good emails today, as well as a couple phone calls. People are starting to think in Greenville, and it's in faraway places like Ohio and Oregon. We understand that there are people listening to the recorded broadcast faithfully in Atlanta at the Blue Cross organization there. We're happy to have you on board listening to the recorded broadcast every day, as well as folks in California, Maine, Oklahoma. The word is spreading, and it's not just in Greenville, and we're thankful for that. Sometime this week, we hope to have our webcast going so you can actually hear the show live remotely all around the world. As soon as our technology and our production staff have got that ready to go, we'll let you know by notice on policyofliberty.net. Of course, live on the show, I'll announce that as well. Tomorrow, if any of you happen to be interested in meeting with me and just discussing some issues of public policy informally for a few minutes, you're welcome to stop by California Dreaming. I normally eat lunch there at noon on Fridays. And so if you are interested and in the Greenville area, please go ahead and stop by California Dreaming. Be happy to see you there. The phone lines are open still if you'd like to call into the show here in the last segment. 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955 to reach the Tyranny Response Network. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you're welcome to send your emails to questions@policyofliberty.net. Questions@policyofliberty.net. One other article that someone sent me that I'm not going to be able to read the whole thing, and I sure wish I could. It is an article called "The Greatest Presidential Reflection Since Lincoln" by Thomas J. DiLorenzo. This appeared on the, I believe it was the LouRockwell.com site, and it's a tremendous article written by the author of the Real Lincoln. Did any of you read out there The Real Lincoln? The Real Lincoln: A New Look at Abraham Lincoln, His Agenda, and Unnecessary War. Three Rivers Press, Random House, published, I believe it was, in 2003. This is a great book for anybody who wants to dispel in their mind the myth, or doesn't even know that they need to have it dispelled in their mind. They still should read this book. Dispel the myths about Abraham Lincoln, this great tyrant in American history, this great liberal, this great leftist, this American Stalin. This is what we're dealing with when we're talking about American Lincoln. And people were comparing George W. Bush and his recent inaugural speech to some of the grandeur of Abraham Lincoln. And I'll go ahead and read just a little bit of what DiLorenzo has to say here, Dr. DiLorenzo, and then tomorrow perhaps we'll pick it up again. He writes the following: "The neocons have spun into fits of the Lincolnite hysteria over President Bush's inaugural speech, in which he promised to rid the planet of tyranny. William Kristol informed a Fox News Channel audience that it was the best presidential speech since Lincoln freed the slaves. Just what speech of Lincoln is he referring to remains to be a mystery. When then on National Review Online, Michael Novak declared that Bush's speech was without question the greatest presidential reflection since Lincoln about the meaning of liberty to the nature of the United States. When the neocons and other Lincoln cultists refer to Lincoln's inaugural address, they almost always refer to his second address, in which he absolved himself of all responsibility for the war, claiming that the war simply came, totally unexpectedly. Then he blamed the whole bloody mess on God. The Lord was punishing America for the sin of slavery, he said. Presuming to know what was in the mind of God, he did not propose a theory as to why the British, Spanish, Dutch, French, and Danes were not similarly punished for the same sin. But the Lincoln's first inaugural address is much longer, much more substantive, and more revealing of the real Lincoln. Most of Lincoln's speeches were of the tongue-twisting stem winders that are the mark of a diabolically clever politician. One usually, and George Bush probably is not in that category. We have to give credit where credit were due, even when credit is due to an evil man for being diabolically clever, and it was the case with Lincoln. DiLorenzo continues. One usually has to read page after page of confusing but slick political rhetoric before getting to the substantive point, which is eventually exposed. So let's try to translate some of his first inaugural address into plain English. The first point he made was to defy anyone to find any evidence of any of his speeches or statements that he ever had any intention at all to disturb Southern slavery. He pledged his underlying support for the protection of Southern slavery and said that it would be criminal of him not to do so. In his own words, he quoted from an old speech of his, "I have no purpose directly or indirectly to interfere with the institution of slavery in the United States where it exists. I believe I have no right, lawful right to do so, and I have no inclination to do so." Furthermore, he said the Republican Party was certainly aware that he did not favor interfering with Southern slavery when it nominated him. Those who nominated and elected me did so with full knowledge that I had made this and many similar declarations and have never recanted them. To make the point even more forcefully, Lincoln quoted the Republican Party platform plank, which pledges the defense of Southern slavery, resolve that the maintenance of the inviolate of the rights of the states, and especially the right of each state to order and control its own domestic institutions according to its own judgment exclusively, is essential, and we do denounce the lawless invasion by armed force on the soil of any state or territory, no matter what pretext, as among the gravest of crimes. Emphasis added, domestic institutions of courts meant slavery. I now reiterate these statements. Lincoln then announced to the world he next pledged his cheerful enforcement of the constitutional protection of slavery, including the Fugitive Slave Act. He mentioned that all members of Congress swore an oath to obey the Constitution, which included the Fugitive Slave Clause, and proposed that law be passed to further codify the responsibility of the federal government to see to it that runaway slaves were delivered up to their owners, as he put it. Such a law, he said, would command unanimous support. Keep in mind, on the day of Lincoln's first inauguration, the seven states of the lower South had seceded, and their senators and representatives had left Washington. The overwhelming majority of Congress was comprised of Northerners, who Lincoln was sure would unanimously support enforcement of the Fugitive Slave Clause. Indeed, just 2 days earlier, the Northern-dominated U.S. Senate passed a proposed constitutional amendment that would have forbidden the federal government from ever interfering with Southern slavery. This first 13th Amendment read, "No amendment shall be made to the Constitution which will authorize or give Congress the power to abolish or interfere with any state and the domestic institutions thereof, including that of persons held to labor by or by service by the laws of that said state." U.S. House of Representatives, 106th Congress, 2nd Session, the Constitution of the United States of America, Unratified Amendments, Document Number 106-214, presented by Congressman Henry Hyde, Washington, D.C., U.S. Government Printing Office, 2000. Well, folks, we're going to read the rest of this article tomorrow because it's just so important in debunking the Lincoln myth. But George W. Bush, in saying or citing or these neocons and equating Lincoln as being the one who freed the slaves and George Bush being the one who is now freeing the world from tyranny, is simply fraudulent, folks. Neither of these men freed the world from slavery or tyranny. And in fact, they have done more than anything, more than other presidents, to enslave us. Now, I can't say George W. Bush is as evil as Abraham Lincoln was in this regard. But nevertheless, through the Patriot Act, we see he's of the same stock as Lincoln. Lincoln did not only not care about slaves, He did not free the slaves when he was first elected. He only used the slavery ploy in the middle of the war to try to boost some morale and get some more people hyped up so they would have a reason to go down, perhaps, and fight some people in the South that didn't know about or had any reason to kill and want to fight. And so here we see the shiftiness of Lincoln, and his true colors need to be exposed. The man was not pro-liberty. The man was in favor of slavery, did not care about slaves, and only used the slavery issue as a means to boost his own political pandering and causes in the world in which he lived. We will have a show one of these days entirely on Lincoln, but I appreciate the DiLorenzo article coming on the heels of this ridiculous inaugural speech of George W. Bush, the shifty, lying politician that he is, and the pro-abortionist, as we saw. But we also see the neocons here in a full fluster and hype over this the election of the neocon president for no reason. This is just no good reason. This is just a pure fraud once again. We've run out of time here on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview today with Dr. John Coben. We're glad you've joined us. We look forward to another show again tomorrow here at 7:30 in the morning in Greenville. Please do spread the word, folks, about the show to all that you know, and send comments and questions to us at questions@policyofliberty.net. We'll see you again tomorrow. This is Dr. John Coben signing off. Have a good day. God bless.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.